MLS Aces episode 167. This is your host, Tom Sweezy. I am joined by Uncle Daddy Sam Nelson. Sam, how you doing, bud?
I am fantastic. now that we're on here. As everyone just heard, it was a hell of a ride to get to this point.
I'm going to cut that part out. People don't need to listen to the technology struggles, but
So nothing happened. We're great. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
I do just want to note Jason Vivang is not with us tonight. You know, the El Paso loss last week, still really getting to him. So he's taking a week off, but he'll be back next week. But Sam, how...
No bopped assist in the
El Paso game. Sam, how have you been? How's the week been for you?
Good. Been good. Busy week with work. I voted this week, did the early voting thing in Maryland. Mm-hmm. That was great. It took me 2 hours in line. Did it because I figured I didn't want to I could go another day, but it was like if I get out of line now, everyone's going to go, man, look at that guy. He's a quitter. And I'm not a quitter. So I stayed in line and I voted. Damn it.
Go out and vote, people. Yes, go out and vote. I will be voting on Tuesday on Election Day. My company has given us off for Election Day, which is very nice.
That's awesome.
So I will be taking that opportunity to do that and then also, you know, get some other errands done. But yeah, make sure you go out and vote. It's definitely your civic duty, right, to go do that. And it's important. So go make sure you vote. I do just want to also start off this episode by saying our thoughts and prayers are with the Grove family. As we talked about a little bit last week to start the episode, Total Soccer Show co-host Daryl Grove, he has now officially passed away. Sad day. Again, it's awful. I don't want to, you know, harp on it because that's something I don't feel Daryl Grove would ever want anyone to do. I feel like Daryl Grove just wants to hear about the soccer, but it's awful. You know, cancer sucks and I feel bad for him, his family, you know, Taylor. It's just it's an awful experience.
Yeah, it was definitely heartbreaking to hear the news officially after, you know, even just getting to talk about it last week a little bit while he was still with us. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, our thoughts are with, you know, Taylor, with his family, as well as obviously with Daryl's family and everything they have to go through. We're going to keep talking about soccer because that's what he would want. So
exactly.
That's what we're going to do.
There's no good way to transition out of that, but if you guys do want to follow us on social media, follow a little bit more about what we do and more of the soccers that we talk about, you can follow me. I pretty much, you know, my main Twitter account is the MLS Aces Twitter account, so you can follow me at MLS Aces. Sam, you're over at Uncle_SamXIII. Jason's over at Jason Vivang on Twitter. You can also follow us on Instagram at MLS_Aces, and you can check out the site at www.MLSAces.com. You can also support us, support the show, the website, everything we do, if you go over to patreon.com/MLSAces. This episode of the MLS Aces podcast is brought to you guys by Added Time Outfitters. So we all love the beautiful game of soccer, right? We spent countless hours watching it, tweeting about it, discussing it, playing it, talking about it, because soccer is the best sport on the planet. We all have our favorite memories from this best sport. You can think of moments like Liverpool's miracle in Istanbul or Celtic's 2-1 triumph over arguably the best Barca side we've ever seen. These moments just keep us coming back for more and more games every single week, every single month, every single year. And what if you can carry those moments with you all the time? Added Time Outfitters created soccer-inspired wristbands that let you wear those memories on your wrist. Each reversible elastic design gives supporters of the beautiful game a unique way to rep their favorite team in any setting. With wristbands from all your favorite teams across Europe, the United States, and beyond, each Added Time design incorporates a 90-minute story from their most famous matches. You can check out all 24-plus designs on addedtimeoutfitters.com. So again, www.addedtime.com, or you can follow them on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Added Time Outfitters. I absolutely love my Added Time Outfitters wristband. Sam, you and I were just talking before we started recording that we don't even take it off. It's absolutely amazing. It's one of my favorite things that I've purchased, and you should go and get yours for sure.
Boom.
That's it. That's Added Time Outfitters.
That's the copy.
I mean, it's that's beautiful. not That's not the copy Foley.
I know.
Not the copy Foley. Okay. I like to throw in my twist, you know, like a little twist to things. But if you guys want to go and get your own Out of Time Outfitters wristband and you want to save some money while doing it, you can go onto their website and you can use the promo code MLSACES, that's MLSACES, for 20% off your entire order. So make sure you go onto their site, use promo code MLSACES, and you save yourself some money and get yourself a sick wristband. The holidays are coming up, so make sure you use that promo code, guys. Helps us out, helps them out, and help yourself out all at the same time. Now, that's the copy. Let's talk about some soccer.
Hell yeah.
Well, I want to start in a little bit of a unique spot, right? We're not going to talk about MLS from the jump. I want to talk, you know, we've had a winner. We've had a champion crowned within the past few days within U.S. soccer. And in our third division, USL League One, we had a USL League One winner announced in the Greenville Triumph. It's not the most unique way. I mean, it is a very unique way of how they were announced. It's not the most maybe favorable way. It's not the way I would have wanted to seen it. But USL League One canceled their final match between Greenville Triumph and Union Omaha after multiple individuals tested positive for COVID-19 on Union Omaha's side. So Greenville, who absolutely dominated the regular season, gets named the League One champion. Now, before we talk about Greenville themselves, when you heard this news, Sam, how did you feel about, you know, a final being canceled because of positive COVID cases?
You know, it's not great to see. It's one of those things too, where it is one of the first finals or first like championships in general being canceled due to COVID numbers. And so it's tough to see. It's unfortunate because it was Union Omaha's first season in the league. They're very, very good. And I think it just comes down to some bad circumstances. I'm not going to go into like, you know, what the players did or if it was staff or like this and that. That's not for me to decide. It's unfortunate for Greenville not to get to prove that on the field that they earned that title, but Greenville earned that title. They were above and beyond the best team in that league. So, I mean, good for them, honestly.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And it's like you said, it's not up to us to decide, you know, like whose fault it is or anything like that. You know, I think we've realized more and more as time has gone on in 2020 that you can catch COVID. It can happen anywhere. Even if you're being super, super safe, it can happen. Yep. So, you know, maybe the smallest case kind of turned into the entire team getting it. Not the entire team, multiple cases on the team getting it. And, you know, it's a tough situation. Obviously, I think as a fan of the game, we all wanted to see a final being played, right? Because that's when you get those incredible moments. That's when you get some of the best soccer. And these teams are playing some great soccer. Like you said, Sam, Greenville was clearly the best team over the entire regular season. In the 16-game regular season, 11 wins, two losses, and three draws. They had plus 13 goal differential to finish the season. Absolutely killed it. They had the tied assist leader with Alex Morrell, who had 6 assists, and the clean sheet leader and goalkeeper Dallas Jay for 9 assists. Like, defensively, they were strong. In the attack, they were strong. In my opinion, if League One gives out an MVP, it should go to Alex Morrell. Like, this team, super, super dominant, right? And this final being canceled takes nothing away from them. They completely deserve this. I know that they raised their trophy tonight, Friday night, and you know, congratulations to them, John Harkes and the crew, because this is totally, totally deserved.
Oh yeah, big John Harkes fan over here. I mean, you know, obviously former DC player, but John Harkes' work with the USL Cincinnati team was on point. He was a hell of a coach, and I mean, I'm just saying, I wouldn't be against seeing him manage DC United, except for that part where he's a former DC player, so that probably won't work. But so, man, he knows what he's doing. Like, that dude knows what he's doing.
So, interesting point you just made there. You weren't on the episode where Jason and I broke down the Ben Olsen firing and then some candidates that were getting circled around.
Funny, of course I would miss that one, right?
Yeah, that's what we said. You know, we're like, of course, you know, Sam misses this, but
celebrate.
It's It's interesting, right? Because John Harkes, you don't always think of a coach going from the third division to the first division. And the beginning of his time at FC Cincinnati was very good, right? You know, he had pretty much the highest payroll in the league to kind of had some success with. And towards the end, things started falling apart a little bit. And, you know, he got fired and they moved on. But he did have some success early on with Cincinnati, and clearly he's had some great, great success with Greenville. Would you be okay with him making the jump up to, you know, MLS from this level and kind of taking the reins of DC?
So what I would say is that I do think that John Harkes is a good system manager. He's definitely got a good system about him, and I think that'll do well. What I hope is because DC has clearly proven in the past that they don't really give you money or, like, give you the options for, like, getting better players. You're kind of stuck with what you get. And so if DC gives John Harkes, like, goes, here you go, you've got the team, make your trades, do what you will, that kind of thing, I think that he could, with his system, have a good team. Now, do I think DC will do that? No, in which case it's a problem. So I don't know. I think it's really 50-50. I wouldn't be against John Harkes doing it. He's obviously he's coached in the second division and the third division now. What he's been the assistant in New York before, so he's a coach that's in quotes in the first division. So I mean, I'm not against it. I think it'd probably be a good one, honestly. But I don't think anyone in DC really wants to see another former player manage the team right now.
No, I mean, that is a fair point, right? Because, you know, for Greenville right now, like I said, they have, in my opinion, at least, I think they have the league MVP in Alex Morrell. Alex Morrell is a dude who has, you know, Chicago Fire experience, a ton of experience in the championship, and he's killed it in League One ever since, you know, League One started last year. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you clearly have a guy who's at the top of the league talent-wise. You have a, you know, again, international goalkeeper in Dallas J. He's the Guam international goalkeeper, but looking at it USL League One level, that's a pretty big deal. And he's been a top goalkeeper for both years of League One's existence. You know, you have a lot of top players at some positions for Greenville. Does that transfer over to DC where, you know, you have a lot of talent, but you don't have maybe the top level at each position type deal? It would be interesting to see. I don't know if I'd pick John Harkes, but I wouldn't say he's a bad option.
Yeah, I mean, given all the options available right now, I mean, I think DC is just going to sit back and wait, and we're going to hear someone in the new year.
Jill Ellis, baby.
My thing with Jill Ellis, and I don't think it's the same problem is with everyone else, is like a lot of people say, you know, she's really bad at man management. She can't command that room anymore because a lot of players will go against her. I don't know about that. Like, I haven't read into that enough. But Jill Ellis was consistently given the best players in the fucking world.
Yeah.
And DC, I promise you, isn't going to give you the best players in America. So that one's going to be tough. Hey, I'm not against it. I think Jill Ellis is a great coach. But Jill Ellis is a great coach for great players with great talent. And I'm not quite sure that DC is great players with great talent, except for, like, Bill Hamid and Julian Gressel. But
I kind of disagree there. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like DC has talent. I just don't feel like they've had the coach to kind of put the talent in a cohesive a lineup. And like,
I mean, we're on a 3-game winning streak now.
Now that Ben Hall's out, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's his name? Whoever, I don't even know our coach's interim coach's name, but he just won coach of the week. So there's that.
Hey, maybe he's gonna get his shot, right? But
he probably will.
Hey, why not? If he's doing well, who gives a shit? But
you're right.
This is not a DC United podcast, but we do talk about Major League Soccer, so we're going to turn to Major League Soccer.
I've heard of Major League Soccer.
And probably the biggest news out of MLS this week, I would say, was Guillermo Barros-Schelotto. Now the former LA Galaxy manager is out as manager in the Galaxy organization after 8 losses in their last 10 games, and he has them 12th in the Western Conference, which is dead last if you didn't know, and 24th in Major League Soccer overall, which is third from bottom, if you didn't know. He is out. In his 59 games as manager across Major League Soccer, some playoffs, U.S. Open Cup, and the MLS's back tournament, Schelotto had 24 wins, six draws, and 29 losses. Definitely not a great record overall from Schelotto, especially a dude who they were expecting to come in, kind of create his system, and then, you know, kind of build for that next generation of Galaxy dominance, I guess. But Sam, what did you really make of the Galaxy's move to fire Schelotto?
I mean, it was the right call. He struggled hard. Obviously, it's a hard year to really judge on, which does make it someone like this difficult, someone with the pedigree that he has. Like, it's tough to watch, but yeah, he had good players. Like, his team was very well. Actually, no, we talked about this before the show too. I'm not really impressed with LA's team, but they were decent enough to have been mid table in the West. I mean, they have the most expensive forward. Transfer market's yelling at me again. I hate this. Sorry, I know, like, probably no one else can hear that, but, like, it's really ridiculous. But, good old, like, chance. Chicharito was just, you know, he just hasn't been a great MLS player like we all expected him to be. And I think a lot of that comes down to the pandemic and not having enough time to bed in with his team first. And then all of a sudden you're in Orlando playing these games in a group stage and like, it matters, but it doesn't matter, and no one really knows how to feel about it. And so, like, I don't know. It's the right call to fire him, but it feels kind of dirty, you know? Kind of disrespect him that way.
Overall, I agree with you, right? I think that the firing isn't going to make a difference, to be completely honest. I think the biggest problem with the LA Galaxy, and, you know, I've heard this from my guys over at LA Is Our House, and I've seen this so many times on social media, and it's hard to disagree with. The biggest problem with the LA Galaxy isn't going to change from, you can bring in any manager you want to take over this team. The upper management does not want to do the right things. They want to spend the money on these big name guys, whether they fit the system or they fit what the head coach wants to do. And they don't want to improve the actual, like, cohesiveness on the field. Like, the back line is trash. Like, the back line is not a good back line.
And they will never spend money on a top tier center back.
But when the LA Galaxy were good, right, who did they have? They had Omar Gonzalez, who was
good.
I'm talking about when the
guy. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying, like, he was good back then. Exactly. I'm agreeing with you, Tom. I swear.
I'm fired up. No, They had AJ De La Garza, right? They had very good players. They had Sean Franklin. They, like, you can name so many talented defensive players that the LA Galaxy had, and it's like, for a team that has the market that they do, for the team that has the recognizability that they do, for everything, it's like, how do you not realize that you can sign the $20 million man in Christian Pavon? You can bring in Chicharito. You can bring in Yoni Gonzalez on loan from Benfica. You can have Jonathan Dos Santos and fucking Joe Corona and whoever else you want to name, right? Because there's a lot of talent there. I disagree with you a little bit. I think that this team does have a lot of talent, but you're looking at the midfield up, right? Like,
but again, it's up front. They have no backfield talent. And even David Bingham is past his prime.
Hey, but, like, Bingham past his prime, you bring in Jonathan Klinsmann, who's been starting, and, I mean, the kid's, like, he's begging for any help in front of him at this point. But it's like, I just don't get it. I really don't. For what the Galaxy are and what they still are, and I still think they are a recognizable, should be big market, should be big team in Major League Soccer.
They're Los Angeles. They have to be.
I mean, you should be, right? Like, at the end of the day, it is what it is. I don't disagree with how the team has been run. They spend money in stupid places, and they don't ever really feel like have the backing of their head coach. So I do agree with you, Sam, that the Guillermo Barros Schelotto firing seems dirty. It doesn't seem right. But at the end of the day, like, you still have to do it because the guy hasn't been successful.
No, I get that. So who do we think's next? Was that you that posted that Jurgen Klinsmann was an option? Did I see that from you? Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Klinsmann is going to start every freaking game now.
I did put up a poll yesterday, mainly as a joke and mainly like just for myself to get be a little entertained because I wanted to see what people would put up. But I said on Twitter, who would be the next LA Galaxy manager? I put up Jurgen Klinsmann because, of course, he's always going to be tied to a job. I put up David Wagner, who we keep on seeing, and that was actually probably like a legitimate question because we keep on seeing Wagner kind of getting tied into rumors around MLS. We saw him a little bit with DC United as well.
Yeah.
I put up Landon Donovan because, of course, I got to put up Landon Donovan. And then I put up another category. You know, we've seen a lot of different names being tossed around. I don't know. I don't think the Galaxy, I think they're kind of, they're going to do what DC is going to do. I don't think they name anyone until next year. Personally, I'd love to see Landon Donovan get it because I think that would just be hysterical and that would just be completely Major League Soccer. But I don't know. Is there anyone that stands out to you that you would prefer to see or you would just love to see the chaos of it ensue?
I mean, yeah, I'd love to see the chaos of someone like Jurgen Klinsmann, but that's also because I kind of love to see the chaos when LA Galaxy is struggling. But I think Galaxy, at this point, we're probably going to be waiting a little bit for an appointment of a manager, build up some dough, flashy manager signing next. It's got to be. I mean, that's the next thing, right?
I mean, yeah.
Has to be. I mean, Who do we have? Mauricio Pochettino to Galaxy.
Yeah, if that happens.
I don't like that either, but, you know, I guess not happening. It's going to be someone flashy. Like, it's got to be.
Exactly. I mean, look, I think the smart play would be to keep Dom Kinnear.
No, we're not smart.
I like Dom Kinnear a lot. I think the guy does a decent, good job with whenever he takes over, right? He's not going to be super flashy.
He's the caretaker right now.
He's the caretaker. That's what I'm saying. Is keep him on if he does a decent... Okay. If he makes the team look a little cohesive, why not keep him on, right? Maybe you can salvage Chicharito a little bit because it doesn't look like he wants to be in LA.
He just needs a year of normal training and stuff. I think he'll be fine. But it was, again, like, for him to come into the league, like, after being over in Europe for so long, like, I'm sure it was weird. And, like, he was ready for this homecoming, and then everything happened. I think he just needs to, like, mentally just reset in the offseason. I think he'll be fine.
I don't disagree. I do just get a little worried because I don't know if he's going to be sticking around long enough to have that mental reset.
That's a good point.
You know, I think he maybe is looking to Liga MX, but we'll see there. Lastly, the biggest rumor that I've seen recently is that the LA Galaxy are set to announce Robbie Keane as manager. I've seen that as a rumor. Ooh. Definitely not anything confirmed, so don't go saying like MLS Aces told you that Robbie Keane's the next manager. I just keep on seeing that rumor around. But I don't know if I'd hate that. I don't think
Robbie Keane fan.
I'm a big Robbie Keane guy too. I just don't think having a former player, kind of similar to DC United situation, would be put up in the best situation for fans to continue to like that former player.
And it would be his first head coaching job. As I'm currently on his Wikipedia page, I did not realize that he was a player manager when he was in the Indian Super League. He's been an assistant for Ireland and Middlesbrough. He was the assistant for Middlesbrough this season. That's crazy.
I was going to say, I thought when he went to India, he had like a contract where he was going to like play a season and then be the manager, but he was a player manager, sure. And I knew he was doing something with Ireland's national team kind of helping out, but like, I don't know.
Let's say player manager, he nine games played, 6 goals. What a savage.
I mean, it's not like the Indian Super League or Premier League, whatever the name of it's top class. But,
You know who is top class? Robbie Keane.
All right, so we're a big Robbie Keane to the Galaxy.
I think we're a Robbie Keane podcast now.
Big locomotive podcast, big Robbie Keane podcast. You know,
I don't want to speak for you or Jason, but big Robbie Keane guy over here.
I'm a fan. I mean, look, I don't know if I have like huge emotions towards it, but I'm a fan. Like, I can't hate the dude.
No.
All right. So let's stop. We've been focusing a lot on two teams between DC and LA. Let's stop focusing on teams. Yeah. Let's
talk about teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, so MLS announced this week that playoff spots are no longer going to be decided first by points because of the interesting COVID-19 delayed games, canceling game season. MLS is going to be deciding playoff spots by points per game first and then points. So first, before we start talking about who's in the playoffs, who's out right now, how did you feel about that move? Is it fair? I know some people have been loving it. Some people have really thought it was a messed up move. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's totally fair. I don't understand why, considering that, like, there's just some teams that will not play as many games as other teams.
Colorado.
Like, this is kind of just, well, that's just it. Like, you're looking at it, and it's like, Colorado's played how many games?
15.
They've played 15, and then, like, you look, everyone else has played like 20, 21. Like, yeah, so points per game kind of just, like, it makes sense. I mean, the other, who did, the NHL did that and the NBA did that. It just kind of makes sense. I'm okay with it because I think the best teams are still going to get in at the end of the day, except for that whole, like, 10 teams in the East thing. That's still beyond me, honestly.
I definitely don't want to even try to start breaking that down or thinking about it, that because that's just,
that means DC can still get in it. So,
and that's just MLS just being, can't again, do that. Being MLS
100%. So, but overall though, it's a good move, especially when like Philadelphia Union has 2.1 points per game. Like, that's freaking impressive.
Yo, the Union have been, I think, you know, I know a few weeks ago I came out on this podcast and I said I think Toronto FC are the team to beat in Major League Soccer. And then I think that weekend on is when they started their, like, not struggles because they're still doing very well, but, like, just more not being as dominant. So I think I might have cursed Toronto FC. But the Philadelphia Union have been very, very good. I don't want to say anything bad about them because I want them to do well because I like them as a team. But the whole points per game thing is interesting though. I like it because, like I said, like you said, the best teams are still going to make it. The best teams are still going to be top of their respective divisions and most likely make those deep runs. It's really going to affect the bottom of the table. And just personally, like, for the listeners out there, maybe your team making or not making the playoffs, but you know, I think if you're a fan of, like, Atlanta, if you're a fan of Vancouver right now, and you guys just make the playoffs or just miss the playoffs, I don't know how upset you're really going to be.
Yeah, it's, like, I don't know. Like, I know we're all, like, we still want our teams to do the best that they can, but it's like, if DC misses the playoffs this year, it is what it is. I'm sorry. Like, I don't care. Like, these teams at the bottom rung, these teams are deserving to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, none of us are. Like, LA Galaxy, if all of a sudden they turn it around the next couple games, like, they don't deserve to be in it because they go on, like, a three-game run.
I completely agree with you there. It's not, you know, it's not like any of you guys in New York City just fighting for a top four spot in the East. You know, that's really what we're...
Nice. Cool. That's fine.
Pretty nice. It's pretty nice.
Not bitter. Right. Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about those playoffs. Who's in the playoffs? Who's out? As of right now, of the 10 playoff spots in the Eastern Conference, this is where we're not going to mention it, but as of the 10 playoff spots in the Eastern Conference, 8 are locked up in the East. So Philadelphia Union, Toronto FC, Columbus Crew, Orlando City, NYCFC, Nashville as a major surprise.
Can't believe it.
New York Red Bulls and the New England Revolution have all locked up their spots in the Eastern Conference. So let's talk about the East. Who are you surprised that's in, and who do you like right now?
Yeah, Nashville is obviously, I think, the surprise. Nashville is, I think, a bigger surprise than Orlando City right now. Because I think after MLS is back, we're all like, Orlando City, yeah, they can do some things. And so, I think we're all fairly high on Orlando City, Daryl Dyke, Cash Muller, all that good stuff. Nashville's a shock. Also, if you look at the table, it's really funny because Nashville is sitting in sixth with 28 points. And New York Red Bulls is sitting in seventh on 29 points. But that points per game, baby. So it's just, it's funny. Nashville. Oh, yeah. And I didn't expect that team to put together the fight they did this year. Just considering where they started from. And then MLS's back really became, you know, a bad situation, getting worse and worse almost every day, it felt like. And so it's good for them. That's nice to see. I really like Philadelphia. I have a lot of concern about Columbus Crew sitting in that third spot. I think they might fall off, and I wouldn't be too concerned about them in the playoffs if I was to face them. Honestly, I just wouldn't.
No, I mean, so for Nashville, completely agree. Good for them. You know, the way they've been performing hasn't been the prettiest, right? Like, people don't like watching defensive soccer, but they
got to do what you got to do to win.
If that's first of all, that's Gary Smith's system, one. And if that's how you win games and that's how you're making the playoffs, and if that's how you're pushing for a top five spot, that's how you got to do it. And Walker Zimmerman has been a defensive player of the year candidate. You know, they've been coming on with some later signings of their DP striker Cadiz. Randall Leal has been picked it up lately. So Nashville has been picking it up. I don't hate them. I think that they're kind of a scary team to face, like a sneaky, scary team. So I like them a lot. I agree with you. Columbus and Toronto, I'm a little down on. You know, I say that now, and now Toronto will probably turn around and make a run for an MLS Cup again. But I'm a little down on them.
Toronto.
I think their form is a little meh. And honestly, right now, I just think the Philadelphia Union, they're undefeated at home. If they're going to finish first in the East, they can just completely have a home run in the playoffs. Like, Philadelphia Union are going to be tough to beat. Friend of the pod, Mark McKenzie. He's been absolutely dominant. He's up for a defensive player of the year in my mind as well. The only thing that I'm a little nervous about is Andre Blake may be done for the season after fracturing his hand. That's a tough blow, because Andre Blake was he was up for the running for goalkeeper of the year as well. So we'll see how they do defensively. I still think they're very strong defensively, but the attack is there. The depth is there. I really, really like the Philadelphia Union.
Oh yeah. Big fan of what they're doing in Philly. And I mean, that's not just team to beat, but that's a scary team to face, period, no matter home or away. I'm not looking forward to playing them if I were, let's see, Montreal, Chicago, New England, like, fuck.
DC.
I'm honestly banking on not making the playoffs. I want that number one draft pick, you know?
Yay. That matters.
Yeah, well, it matters if, you know what, I'm not getting into the fact. But it's like, that's way too complicated.
I want to shout out also that that Philly now has Corey Burke back. They, you know, he's finally back after his whole mess and playing in Europe last season. But he's back, adding even more striker depth to them. He scored last game. I saw a bunch of Corey Burke tweets. I love it. So honestly, really, really happy for the Union and their fans right now, because Dupe deserves to have some glory. But let's look at the West now. So in the West, there's not 10 playoff spots. There's eight playoff spots.
Sorry, I had to say
it. Hey, it's fine. Five of the eight spots in the West have been locked up. I said West because you said West. But Sporting Kansas City, the Sounders, the Timbers, the Loons, and LAFC have all locked up their spots in the West. Right now, looking at the West, man, to me personally, Seattle is like clear above the favorite over the rest of these teams.
Yes. I mean, Seattle's far and away the best team in the West. There's literally zero question. That team is solid front to back. And they're so fun to watch. Like, we were just saying, it's not fun to watch Nashville for some people. It is fun to watch the Seattle Sounders play. And, I'm going to enjoy watching them go into it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see them back in MLS Cup final again this coming season.
No, exactly. I mean, a few weeks ago, when the announcement that Rui Diaz tested positive for COVID, Jason and I were a little worried, but he's back. He's playing. He's healthy. He's looked amazing. Jordan Morris has looked good. Nico Ladero hasn't looked like the same Nico in years past, but, you know, I mean, he's also getting up there every single year. He's a little bit older, so, but he's still
hitting. He's a big playoff guy.
He is, but he still bops assists in the playoffs, you know.
Well, that's just it.
The back lines look good. Like, Seattle's just good.
Yeah. I mean, you can't say enough about how good they are, really.
That's really it. The last good team that I am a little high on right now, I would say is a little dangerous right now, and that's LAFC.
Let's see what you say.
LAFC.
It's not who I was going to say, but I like it.
The reason why I say LAFC is because Carlos Vela is back. You bring that dude on the field, complete game changer. He's been rested for most of the season. If you can have him fully healthy now on this just stretch, I think LAFC can skyrocket up the table a little bit, one. And then, two, make a nice deep run in the playoffs, especially some big moments. Diego Rossi has been continuing to be on fire. Brian Rodriguez has looked good. Bradley Wright Phillips is scoring goals out of nowhere. Defensively, still some question marks there, I will say that. But Eddie Segura's definitely looked better. Like, I really like if LAFC right now is healthy moving forward to the playoffs, I think that they can make a good run.
Oh, I mean, LAFC with that talent can always make a good run.
Yes.
I'll throw out my team that I think is going to – that. All right, I'll say it now. I think Minnesota United is going to make a run in these playoffs. I just think it's going to happen. I think that Minnesota knows how to stifle an offensive team and really just bring them down. I mean, fuck, Adrian Heath, I just can't even believe he's still there. But he – I mean, because – I mean, you remember the beginning of Minnesota United when they were the worst defensive team in all of MLS history at one point.
Not great.
But, and they are – they figured it out, and I think that team is very good and knows how to win, which, I mean, for 2.5 years, they did not know how to do. And so I'm looking forward to seeing them in the playoffs this year.
I don't disagree with you, but there's just something about Minnesota that...
Let them play at home in the snow, and it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, the orange ball makes it better.
Yeah,
but I don't know. There's just something about them that I'm not sold on, like... Even after getting Kai Kamara, the goal scoring struggles have still been there. You know,
St. Clair is too good though.
I don't know, man.
So good since he's come into the league.
I'm a little down. That's all I'm gonna say. I'm not sold on you.
Okay, that's fine.
The last team that I want to talk about as another team I'm a little down on, and that's Sporting Kansas City. Technically, points wise, most points in the West, but. My confidence level, not the greatest. I'm going to be completely honest.
Not most points in the last.
Yeah, they do. 36.
No, but I'm saying, like, confidence-wise, not so much.
Confidence-wise,
they do have the most points.
Confidence-wise, they don't have all
the points. Or, like, the Rapids.
But,
19 points.
I don't hate Sporting Kansas City. Like, I do, but I don't. Like, I want to like them. Like, they have good players and they score goals, but like, defensively they can't hang on to a game. I feel like they just lose random games that they really shouldn't be. They're very hot and cold. I just really am not super confident on this SKC team moving forward. I don't think that this is a team that is going to be deep enough that's going to show up every single week to make a run in the playoffs like you have to do.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't Sporting Kansas City last year like the worst team in the West?
Yeah, I mean, they had like...
They were definitely like bottom.
Yes.
I mean, it's so like, I think that alone, like it's nice to see them really back where they should be near the top of the West. But I don't know. They're fine. They're starting to kind of show some struggles, and I mean, I don't know if I see them really even holding on. This is the problem I have, Tom, and I'll get into this. How many games does each fucking team have left? So, like, I don't know. So, it's like, could Sporting Kansas City do fine the rest of the season? Yeah, if they have 6 or 7 games, but if they've only got 3 left, they could lose all 3 pretty easily with the way things are going.
I don't know. I think the target is for all teams to hit 23 games. I just don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, if that's the case, then they have 3 games left. Good luck, Sporting Kansas City. is that going to happen? Colorado's sitting on 15 games right now. LA Galaxy's on 19. Like, this is just crazy.
Yeah. No, and I mean, that's why, going back to the conversation before, the points per game is the thing right now.
It has to be.
because, you know, and again, going back to what we talked about with Greenville, you can't always say that it's like someone's fault for COVID kind of being a factor within your locker room or anything like that, because it can happen anywhere, especially with professional sports, guys on top of each other constantly. Like, it's not the most conducive environment for being socially distant and safe and smart. So, you know, it's tough, but at the end of the day, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how kind of, I guess, decision day wraps up, because we don't really know. Points per game changes it all. The teams can jump so many spots for points per game. So it's going to be interesting. But I mean, it's going to be fun at the same exact time too. A little mix up, a little confusion. All right, let's dive into the last little bit of MLS news that came out this week. MLS announced that they have a change to their yearly awards. There will no longer be an MLS Rookie of the Year award. They are changing it over starting this year to an MLS Young Player of the Year award. Pretty much is going to be the best player in the league that is 22 years old or younger. So first off, I saw a lot of people online hating that saying 22 isn't young. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't even know how to react to 22. I mean, as a 26-year-old now, feels pretty fucking young. But I mean, that's the thing, is it's like in soccer, like, is 22 young? In Europe, yeah, but in Major League Soccer, like, you're not, half these guys aren't getting their chances until they're like 24, 25. So it's tough. I don't know. I think 22 and younger seems fair for a Young Player of the Year award. It's unfortunate to lose a Rookie of the Year award, but overall, we're going to start seeing, like, you know, these guys who all of a sudden don't hit their sophomore slump and just get better and better each year. Like, we're going to start seeing those guys winning these awards, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think 22 and younger is perfectly fine. You know, people were throwing the argument around online that England's Young Player of the Year is 23 or younger. So, you know, whatever. I know we're not England, but I mean, you know, I think 23 would be perfectly fine, to be completely honest with everyone. But
that's fine.
You did mention it, right, that you're a little sad that the Rookie of the Year is no longer going to be a thing. I'm personally okay with it. To me, it means the death of the Super Draft almost, or the death of the importance of the Super Draft.
No, I don't. I'm still here for the Super Draft.
No, look,
we can get into that in the off season, but
I'm here for the Super Draft. I think the Super Draft should still be a thing. I just think this means that the Super Draft is totally not as important as maybe finding a 19 or 18 year old from South America.
I mean, yeah, but also no one's drafting a guy going, boy, I hope you win Rookie of the Year. I mean, you know, half these Super Draft guys are depth guys. Even number one overall picks are depth guys half the time anyway. Like,
but then the nice stories of like Daryl DK, perfect chance. I mean, a perfect example of like a dude who has, I think he has like 6 or 8 goals or something like that, and like has been looking like an absolute boss for Orlando City.
Yeah, I mean, he's a stud. He's an absolute freaking stud. And who's the other number one pick on that team? Ja Moutinho, my guy. Yep. Ja Moutinho.
Your guy.
Yup. That's my guy. I love that guy. But I think it'll get rid of the Super Draft, because I think MLS is trying to cling so close to what the NFL does in every way, shape, and form except for the sport itself, that we won't see the end of that. But I think we'll start seeing, you know, I don't even remember, because I didn't get to listen to all of your episode with Jason last week. Did you guys talk about the formation of the new reserve league?
We did a little bit. I think that was maybe 2 weeks ago. You know, it's an interesting topic. It's not like, you know, I was expecting something a little bit more official to come out since we talked about it. It's going to be interesting. You know, the impact on USL and, you know, money. To me, it comes down to money. MLS wants to keep their money within their own league, instead of pretty much funding a good portion of USL every single year. But it's it, the whole, that'll be interesting to me. And I think that that could maybe impact the Super Draft as well.
I think it has to, with not just these guys who are homegrown to all of a sudden go off to college and you're trying to draft these guys back. But I think it's going to be a better developmental league to get these guys, you know, consistent minutes every week that you can almost guarantee, as opposed to going off to loaning them to a USL team where you just don't even know what's going to happen. You can guarantee your first round pick is going to be playing every week in the reserve league for a couple weeks until you get them up to speed on your system, and moving forward like that. So I think that will be a positive still for the Super Draft.
I don't know. I'm not sold on the reserve league. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows I'm a big USL guy. I like the USL. I like the structure of it. I like that they've set up a third division and everything like that. I think that USL might be a more beneficial option for a young player who's not ready for MLS minutes yet. I think it's more professional, right? I think especially when you send a USL guy on loan to an independent USL side, like we saw Andrew Carlton go on loan from Atlanta United to the Indy 11 this year. Andrew Carlton had a much better season on the field than he ever had with Atlanta United too. I think that getting them more into a professional environment and out of like maybe a comfort zone a little bit is a good thing. It pushes them a little bit more. And I don't know if you're just continuously running college kids out on a field, or maybe like a 15 or 16 year old out on a field with these college kids. How is that any different or any much of an upgrade from the NCAA?
Well, I don't want to go into full detail about this, but without the development academy system and the way that academies are seem to be growing, but and this pay for play movement still, like, it's going to be tough for guys who, unless you're caught at a very early age, you're going to have to go to college if you're going to keep playing, because you know, there's only going to be so many spots for random 18-year-olds these days before you have to move on to college and continue your life. I really do agree with what you're saying, Tom, about the USL, and I think that professionalism and playing against, for lack of a better term, the big boys. But I think there's a lot to be, I think there's a lot to be said about, these guys coming out of college being able to compete. I don't know where I was going with this, god damn it. I had a really good point here, I swear.
It sounded really good, I'm gonna be honest.
But like, without this academy system now, I'm really concerned about how development's gonna go, in some of these places. Like, who's really picking up dudes in some random ass states now? I was about to say Utah, but I forgot about
RSL.
The Barca Academy.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of open space out there that's not going to be picked up by these academy systems anymore. And I'm more concerned about that than anything. And it's tough to kind of swallow losing the development academies. Maybe that's what I'm mad about. I'm just mad that we lost the development academies.
No, 100%. I agree with you there. And I don't want to keep harping back on this, but USL, they're setting up their own academy system, and
which I do appreciate,
picking up players between the championship level, the USL League One level, and the USL League Two level. They all have, not all teams, but most teams do have an academy system set up, and they're playing in an academy league, which I appreciate. And it kind of, I didn't think we'd take this route for the podcast, but I appreciate it, which is just another thing of what I think USL does well. And it's a reason why we talk about USL on this podcast, along with MLS and NWSL, because for the most part, U.S. soccer leagues are doing big things. And, I'm going to transition into a different conversation now, Sam. But we do have another big thing happening this Sunday. We have a final. We have a U.S. soccer final this Sunday at Al Lang Stadium. If you don't know where that is located in Tampa Bay, Florida, the Tampa Bay Rowdies will be hosting Phoenix Rising for the USL Championship title. It's going to be an incredible, incredible game. A lot of big names, a lot of big talent. Even if you are not a USL Championship fan and you are an MLS fan, you are going to recognize a lot of names on this field. Just for a little background for you guys, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, they won their regular season group, 10 wins, 3 draws, 3 losses. Start the playoffs, they beat the Birmingham Legion 4-2, then went on to beat their rival Charleston Battery 1-0, then go on the road in the Eastern Conference Finals to knock off the powerhouse of Lou City 2-1. Then on the flip side,
if you guys don't know about how big it is to beat Louisville, that is fucking huge.
At Louisville.
So, like, that's massive. So, like, these Rowdies aren't messing around.
No, that game was incredible. If you have ESPN Plus, I urge you to go back and watch it because it was a fantastic game. And even if you're just not really a USL fan, but you want to see a sick stadium, go watch that game for Lynn Family Stadium because that stadium is a beauty. So the Rowdies, that was their path to this final. On the Phoenix Rising side of things, they won their regular season group as well. They had a little bit of a better record with 11 wins, 2 draws, and 3 losses. Start the playoffs, they beat the Sacramento Republic 1-0. Then they go on to face Reno 1868 FC, who were dominant in the regular season. They beat them on penalty kicks 5-4. Then they go on in the Western Conference Final to face Locomotive Jason's El Paso Locomotive, and they won 4-2 in penalty kicks. Locomotive, great season, guys. We love you still, but fell short once again. Sorry about that. But that is the Phoenix Rising path to this USL Championship. I'm so excited about this game. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to pick. I've been thinking about this for like the past like day or so. It's going to be just a great defensive game. I really feel like the Tampa Bay Rowdies have been so good defensively. Forrest Lasso and Jordan Scarlett have been sick on that back line for the Rowdies the entire playoffs and for the regular season. You got big old Evan Loro in net. Evan Loro, if you guys don't remember, was a Red Bull Academy dude, came up, played a lot of Red Bull too, and was the heir apparent to Luis Robles until he decided to leave. And then on Phoenix Rising side of things, Darnell King has been strong at left back for them. Zach Lubin has had to make the most saves in these playoffs with 14 saves in 3 games. Defensively, they've been there as well. Obviously, some late game pushes to take things to penalty kicks. So I think this is going to be a good, good game. Goals are going to be hard to come by. I'm excited to see who can really break the tie here.
I mean, it's going to actually be a really exciting final. This is one of those heart and head things. It's like my head says pick Phoenix, that they're just like an offensive juggernaut. My heart says pick Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay has always been there and defense wins championships. I couldn't tell you where to go with this all right now. It's actually really crazy when you think about it.
I have my pick.
Okay.
I think Phoenix is there, right? Phoenix is always dangerous. You have last year's MVP in Solomon Asante.
Yeah.
They bring in Santi Moore, who has been a stud throughout his time in U.S. soccer. They have a lot of talent on this team, right? They pretty much have like half the Jamaican national team as their starting 11. But
I love where this is going because I'm waiting for the but. There it is.
But
yes.
You got to listen to your heart, and I agree with you, Sam. This is definitely a heart pick, but they've been grinding. They've been doing their best to put together this team for years now, and I really feel like this is the time. I talked about the defensive presence already, but on the offense, no one's talking about Sebastian Guinzotti. They're forward, 2 goals and an assist in 3 games so far this playoffs. In the midfield, you have Zach Steinberger, who's been absolutely killing it as well. He has a goal and 2 assists. He's dishing them out. He's bopping assists all over the field for the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Bopping assists.
I am going to pick at home. The Tampa Bay Rowdies are going to lift the 2020 USL Championship title.
Love it. I love this.
That's my pick.
When is this game?
This game is Sunday on ESPN.
Oh, that's good shit. Like
not
that.
ESPN Plus, not ESPN 2, not ESPN Deportes. Big ol' ESPN.
Or ESPN News. But that, the OG ESPN.
Big old ESPN. So make sure you watch this.
Yes, I'm all for it. Let's do this.
I got
live watch. RIP to Locomotive, though.
RIP, we still love you, Locomotive. Next year.
Still love you. Yeah.
I just want to do one last little tease. You know, last week wasn't able to get a second episode out because I wasn't really able to grab an interview for you guys, but I got an interview for you guys coming tomorrow. Well, actually, the same day this drops, I'm really hoping to get an interview out for you guys. So either Saturday night or Sunday morning, stay tuned to your podcast apps. Follow us on social media so you can see whenever I drop this. We have an interview with someone who may be playing in this championship title game. Just going to say that.
Ooh, I love I love that.
Love it, right?
I love that.
So stay tuned for that because we are going to get maybe a little inside look on the preparation for the final. And, you know, maybe I have also some promises on some player side of things for, you know, if someone wins, I can get them on the podcast to talk about the championship as well. So just some things possibly coming down the line for you guys. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got this week, Sam. You have anything else you want to talk about U.S. soccer wise?
No, you know, I think just a couple weeks left before we hit playoffs, and I'm loving it.
That's going to be a fun time. Those are always the best episodes to record with the three of us. But if you got nothing else, I got nothing else. Sam, it's been a pleasure to record with you tonight. Everyone, enjoy the title game on Sunday. Congratulations to the Greenville Triumph once again. And let's just hope for bigger, better days in U.S. soccer and in life because 2020 has been a mess. Peace, everybody.